also E for explicit on this episode for language, just for that.
Yeah, because it's not as if we've been, you know, just saying, like, shiver me timbers.
Is it fate or just a date? Bet it's a movie Chelsea or hate. Mads is here to make her watch it. Either way, grab your popcorn, stay in for the evening. You know what it's time for, love at first screening.
Hello and welcome back to Love at First Screening, the show where I, rom-com enthusiast Madison, introduce my friend, co-host, and resident genre skeptic Chelsea.
That's me.
To all the feel-good,
cliche,
romantic,
questionable,
hilarious,
occasionally humorous
films she's never wanted to watch. Chelsea, we're back. Like, I know that there will be two episodes before this, but you and I, we're back, baby. We just did that intro for the first time in so long.
We just did that intro for the first time in, I looked, 31 weeks, which is 217 days.
And I mean, here's the thing, for a good reason, because obviously, you know, strike needed to happen, fights needed to be fought, battles needed to be won. But damn, that felt good.
It's like a distant memory. I realized right before recording, I was like, crap, I don't even remember what document that intro's in.
Honestly, it's sort of like that one summer that you spent at that ranch in Wyoming with the girl you thought would be the love of your life, and then you have to go home because of a family tragedy, and she thinks that you broke things off, but you didn't. She just never got your message, because it turns out her dad sold the ranch in the meantime, and here you are 10 years later on her adventure quest that she has, where you and your friends are pretending to be cowboys searching for the lost treasure of Butch Cassidy. That's how it feels. Reunited again.
What was that a reference to, Madison?
Thank you so much for asking. That was a reference to Something Wilder by Christina Loren, which is the next book that I want you to read.
I will consider it. You said there was treasure hunting, which is a plus, but I don't think it's gay, so that's a minus.
But does it make you feel better to know that there are cowgirls?
Yeah, I mean, I can get behind some. Okay, you know what? You cannot say that. That needs to not be in this episode. Oh my god. That sounds really bad.
We'll just put it this way. Chelsea supports cowgirls emotionally.
I can support cowgirls, Madison. So,
well, Chelsea, unfortunately the movie that we watched today not have cowgirls, so we could go ahead and talk about it, but if you'd rather talk more about cowgirls, we can also do that.
Maybe as a fun callback to cowgirls later, we can try and insert cowgirls into this film and see how that affects the plot, just for like a fun little goof.
I think it would be easy to transition just a couple of cowgirls into this movie. You wouldn't even notice it. It'd be so fluid.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Would definitely not stick out amid, is this Southern California? Somewhere in California.
If you don't already know, we watched Love and Basketball for today's episode, featuring Omar Epps and Sana Lathan as our two leads. And Chelsea, for the first time in so long, I get to give you the backstory of a movie. Well, I mean, it's not that long because we've been telling each other backstories of fake movies for the last season. But, all right. So, Love and Basketball is a 2000s American romantic sports drama film, which is not a rom-com, but I included it on this list for this season because it is in so many must-watch rom-com lists. So we have to evaluate if they deserve to be there. It was written and directed by Gina Prince-Bythewood. It was actually her first feature film. And she went on to direct incredible films, including, but not limited to, actually possibly limited to, I don't want to overshoot my shot there. But the two that people most likely would recognize are The Secret Life of Bees and most recently, The Woman King.
Which is excellent, by the way, if you haven't seen it. It's so, I also enjoyed The Secret Life of Bees, so, you know.
The Secret Life of Bees held, like, a special little traumatic place in my heart as a child, because I read that book, I think, at, like, age 10 or 11, and then watched the movie, and I was like, wow, this is heavy shit. Anyway, so it's kind of established itself as a cult classic, and actually last year in 2023, it was selected for preservation in the United States National Film Registry by the Library of Congress as being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. So, you know, it has its place, most assuredly. In terms of our plot, the story is divided into four quarters, sort of looking at different periods of the lives of our protagonists. So the first quarter starts in 1981, our leads, Monica and Quincy, played by previously referenced Sana Lathan and Omar Epps, are children and they become friends over their shared love of basketball. And Monica is the better player, perhaps, because she beats Quincy in their first game of one-on-one. They end up reconciling later, having a complicated relationship after they share their first kiss. Second quarter kind of fast forwards to 1988, where Monica and Quincy are attending high school. Quincy is a star basketball player. Monica is the leader of the girls' basketball team. And I want to note that, like, it kind of irked me that they were set at this dichotomy where it's like, Quincy's the star basketball player. And oh yeah, Monica's also a star basketball player, but she plays for the girls' team. Anyway, I digress. He's super popular, dates all the prettiest girls in school, and Monica's struggling with her feelings for Quincy. They connect romantically, and I want it noted that I'm pulling a chunk of this summary from Wikipedia so I can be concise, and they use the term make love after both being accepted to University of Southern California. I wouldn't use that phrase. I just want it noted. No. All right. So then the third quarter of our timeline starts. They're in college. He's a promising player while she's kind of having these frequent run-ins with her head coach and kind of struggles to get playing time on the women's team. And then he starts struggling with media attention and discovers his father's infidelity. So between all of the pressures of their athletic and academic commitments, coupled with their deteriorating relationship, they break up. So in a true sense, we have this third act breakup. And then it fast forwards to 1993, a few years, notably before the establishment of the WNBA. They're both professional basketball players. She plays for the IBWA team in Barcelona. He's playing for the LA Lakers. And he ends up having a devastating knee injury. And she goes to visit him and finds out, what? He's engaged. For what? Marriage. And she ends up also, there's a sort of like side plot-ish where she confronts her mom. He recovers. His wedding's drawing closer. And she quits basketball to work at a bank, which is probably the most anticlimactic part of so much. Then her mom kind of is like, you should pursue your dreams. And she's like, my dream was Quincy, but he's engaged. Let's play another one-on-one game to call back to the beginning of all of this. And if he loses, he has to call off the wedding. But he wins and realizes he's still gonna call off the wedding. And then she plays in the WNBA. And they have a kid and they play basketball with a kid. So I feel like, yeah, that's about it. So Chelsea, did you like this movie? I don't think that this was necessarily a movie that you would seek out, as it's a romantic sports drama. It's just not, when I think of you, I don't automatically think romantic sports drama. I don't think that you clawed your eyes out over it, though.
Yeah, famously, I'm not a romance, nor am I a sports person. So, of course, I would not usually seek out a romantic sports drama for casual consumption. However, here I was watching this movie, Love and Basketball, which I've heard mentioned a lot. This is one of those movies that, like you said, has, if you Google, like, must-see romantic comedies, it tends to come up in people's lists, despite the fact that, and I'll say this right up at the top, this movie is not funny. Like, this is not a comedy.
No.
At all. This is a drama. However, did I like this movie? I thought it was pretty good, and I say that as someone who doesn't care about basketball, nor do I care very much about heterosexual romance. I thought the movie was pretty good. Do I have edits to this film? Absolutely. But I would say blanket, like, you know, just to give you my thoughts up front, I did enjoy it. If someone wanted to watch it again, I probably would. It certainly didn't make me angry, as some films we watch do. I found myself a little bit frustrated with the romance, surprise, surprise. I have some questions. And also, I think just, and, you know, maybe this is me coming from, like, my preferences, but I found myself way more invested in Monica and her story than anything having to do with Quincy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's because we were so focused, like, the through line between these two people is the romance. And so because that's where the focus was, and I didn't find that compelling, we were probably not given some of the storyline that is Quincy's, and we're not given some of the storyline that is Monica's. And because you're given a very brief viewpoint of either of these characters, because you have to focus on their relationship to each other, I'm wondering if there's information that maybe I would have found compelling about Quincy that it just wasn't there. But I found Monica very compelling, and I would have watched an entire movie about her and her drive and her, like, passion for basketball and whatever. And I say that as someone who doesn't understand basketball and is not interested in basketball, but I think as a woman, I can appreciate the very real struggle that I think most women in the realm of sports face. When I think most recently in terms of, like, news headlines, the National Women's Soccer League, is that the correct term? I don't know. I'm not a sports person, but I know at least in the last, like, in recent history, you know, there was a lot of discussion about pay in women's sports, relating specifically to soccer, or as the rest of the world calls it, football, and everything. And also, okay, I don't know if I want to say this yet or not, but, like, this movie should have been gay, and it wasn't, and it made me mad, because I literally am watching it going, okay, but they're gonna kiss, right? And then they didn't, and I didn't get it. I'm like, but they should have kissed. Why is she kissing this guy? Why is she so invested in that relationship? Anyway, we can talk about my in-depth, like, all the things I would change about this film. But, yeah, so I guess overall, I thought it was a pretty good film. I really liked Monica and her storyline. I also think that if we got rid of Quincy, or, like, made Quincy more of a side character, that we could have had a more robust look at Monica's relationship with her mother, which I feel like takes a real backseat until that last quarter of the film, which mm-hmm. I think was a little unbalanced. I feel like there's only a few moments that you get to see with her mom, and then it's like, all of a sudden it's like, well, we gotta wrap this up, right? So we gotta. But I actually, you know, speaking of the structure of the film, I actually liked it. I thought, especially for what it is, which is a romance, a romance that spans many, many years, a romance that's like definitely childhood friends to lovers to being estranged, and then I don't even want to say finding their way back to each other, because honestly it felt way out of left field, to use a different sports metaphor. So, but yeah, I did appreciate the fact that we got to really like be with these characters for a long period of time. But the movie's, you know, 2 hours, which is not the longest a movie can be. I mean, it's not short, but I think that there's a lot of information that was, so I think the writing of this film was really smart. In that respect, I liked the structure, and I can appreciate the fact that it is, you know, separated the way a basketball, you know, it's separated into quarters like a basketball game, which I only recently, somebody was like, yeah, four periods, it could be basketball or football. And I was like, oh, I don't think I didn't know anything about basketball. I don't know anything about sports. My knowledge is very limited. But yeah. Okay, I'm gonna stop talking now, because I want to say things more concrete, and right now I'm trying real hard to be general.
I also feel like really any movie benefits from having a more specific lens, and I feel like had this been through a very Monica-centric lens, I almost feel like the romance would have just been a touch more believable if that had been the case too, because I feel like it, I don't know, I feel like the motivation of the romance always felt so secondary to their sports aspirations that it didn't feel, I don't want to say that it didn't feel important, because again, it's the through line of each of these bits, but at the same time, it just didn't, I don't know. I think that if it had been through her lens, then we could have seen more reason behind the pining, I guess, would be the best way to put it. And yeah, no, I also completely agree that the issue with her mom being shoved into the last act, it, let's be honest, introducing any kind of, like, parental issue with a character automatically has the ability to give them and like their motivations and their actions so much more depth. And so to stick that at the very end, it just, I don't know if they were necessarily hoping that it would act as a slight aha moment for her motivations, but it didn't hit that way.
Speaking to that scene, like the confrontation she has with her mom in the kitchen, like it was like, yes, we had established that there was a disconnect between her and her mother, seemingly from the outside. That disconnect was about, you know, she's a very sporty young woman, her mom seems to be very invested in you know, homemaking. And, you know, being, and I guess, beauty seems so, like, I don't know. But that, I mean, that is what she's, that's what she's invested in, because that is the kind of woman that she was probably raised to be. And so we see these two things brush up against each other. And I do think that it adds a layer, considering that, you know, Monica is coming up, like, in particular, like the second quarter where she's in high school, she gets reprimanded for being aggressive during the game. Like, you know, she's like, everybody's like, you got to cool it, you got to cool it, you got to cool it. And like, I'm clocking this as like two things. Well, really one thing, because in the context of this film, they seem to go to a predominantly, if not all, Black high school. And so, but I'm like, my little sensors is like, okay, she's a Black woman, and like, but is that a community policing itself? I don't know, and I don't know that I'm the right person to really talk about it, but I am clocking that she's being seen as aggressive, which is both a like policing of her gender and her race, whether the people around her are policing both of those, just one of those, I'm not sure. But like, in general, when women aren't supposed to be, women are supposed to be very like docile, like, right? And that's what her mother, that's who her mother is. And, you know, she gets called out for being aggressive. And then like, we cut and we see, well, not really, but what I would love if this was a different movie, what we would cut and see is that the boys would be being just as aggressive and like no one's calling them out. Like they're just excited. They're just passionate, right? Women are called emotional for having emotions, which men and other people also have, except they're not ever perceived as negative. If they're big, coming from someone, unless they're a woman. If they're a woman, you can't have big emotions without being emotional. So I feel like, you know, I can appreciate the disconnect that she's having with her mother. And I feel like it would have been so much stronger in a film where what we were examining was specifically women in basketball pre the establishment of the WNBA, right? Like, I think that would have been important. Like, I use the word important, but I can't think of another word. There's a word I'm trying to think, and I can't fucking think of it. Anyway, we see this established early on. She goes to the prom, and her mom is like, oh my gosh, you're so beautiful. And, like, she has that moment of, oh my God, I'm beautiful. Like, she's realizing for the first time that she contains multitudes. Like, she can be this powerful, you know, young woman who's incredible at the sport that she, you know, has worked so hard and built so many skills for. But like, also, she's, you know, she's beautiful and she can participate in other parts of like the high school experience in this particular case. But like, moving forward, she can be many things. She doesn't just have to be one thing. And I think that in a lot of ways, in lots of different stories, you'll see like when someone is told they cannot be something, they make that their like hyper focus of like, well, this is what I am, and that they make it their identity. And like, yeah, that's a key factor of your identity if that's something that's really important to you and something you're really passionate about. But also, there are other facets to you. You contain multitudes. You are not just one thing. So again, had this been a movie that was strictly about like Monica and basketball, I think maybe that would have been more developed and we would have seen more instances of it throughout the film. But at the end, she confronts her mother and there's a lot of almost exposition about like why Monica didn't get along with her mother. And like, what, like, basically she was fighting against, like, I'm going to be somebody that stands up for myself. I'm going to be somebody that, you know, does the thing I'm passionate about. I'm going to do the things I want to do in life because I saw my mother shrink and I am refusing. But in this weird way, instead of being a support for her mother, which, and I get that what that sounds like, right? Because like a kid, especially as a kid, like you're not supposed to be supporting your parents, but like instead of being a inspiration for her mother or whatever, she kind of pushed her mother to the side. She distanced herself from her mother because she didn't want to be her mother, which is interesting. And I think speaks to the ways in which women in particular distance themselves from other women that they don't agree with, don't want to be like. And we can see this in across, you know, areas, right? Like we can see this, women will very loudly be like, oh, she's just a housewife or whatever, she's a trophy wife. Like we label them and we like stick them off in the corner and we're like, I'm nothing like them, because we're all clamoring for any kind of power in this ridiculous patriarchy that we live under. So but inevitably yeah. What that does is we're just putting down other women, And, you know, and this is very complex. It's not just as easy as, like, supporting, you know, support women, blah, blah, blah. And that sounds very white feministy, like, and I don't want to get, like, there's so many things. But just in this respect, I think, you know, distancing yourself from a type of woman that you don't want to be, I think, is pretty usual. Like, that, it makes a lot of sense that she would push her mom to the side. But as we were saying, it feels like in that last act to have that resolution, it's not quite as satisfying, I think, than if we had seen more of their struggles and ups and downs.
Yeah, and I honestly, it's so funny because I almost, like, I know that I'm the rom-com enthusiast. I know that I should be focusing on the romantic part of this story and try to champion it in some way. But I'm so caught up in this overarching viewpoint of, like, how relationships are affected between everybody when women are put in a position to attempt to occupy male, like, predominantly male spaces of power. Because that's what I find most interesting about this movie. I mean, I don't know, because I feel like we can also see, you know, when we were talking about, you know, with the prom scene, you know, she can contain multitudes. And then I feel like this does reach into the idea of the love story that's presented. Is it's this innate fear that women have, or just people in general who are trying to occupy spaces that are designed to keep them out. They feel the need to sacrifice various parts of themselves, various interests, various just factors of their life, to be able to try to squeeze into this space in an uncomfortable way, in a way that leaves a lot of them out. But I think what I really loved about this, even though we can get into the point of, like, oh, how do we feel about the fact that he's breaking off his engagement to someone else? Like, I feel like that could bring up a conflict of emotion for some people. But the fact that in the end, I feel like he kind of made a sacrifice. Like, he changed the trajectory of his life in a way to be with her. Even if it wasn't necessarily, like, as earth-shattering as, you know, we see a lot of women in other movies do. Like, call back to Sweet Home Alabama when she leaves New York to go back to Podunk, Alabama. But I think that I don't know, I appreciated that at the end of the film, it kind of felt like Monica was able to embrace every part of what she wanted. She had a family, she had the man that she loved, and she had her career in the WNBA. And that, I think it's a diversion from the common plot that we see in romantic movies.
No, for sure. And actually, that's really interesting what you say, is that Quincy almost takes on the role that women do in your typical Hallmark style rom-coms, which is you know, say goodbye to your career-driven life and, you know, commit yourself to the romance, the relationship. I think that's an interesting thought. That, I mean, my rebuttal to that would be that he had kind of already lost everything, right? Like, he was injured. I think his career in the NBA was over at that point. And so really the only sacrifice there was not marrying Tyra Banks. But you know what? I would like to say why I don't like this romance. I think, right, because I want to talk about Monica and I want to talk about women in sports. Like, that's what I'm interested in about this film. But, like, let's talk about why I didn't find the romance compelling. I think childhood friends to lovers can be quite sweet. I think the idea of, like, really knowing a person, particularly in film, where it's a shorter storytelling medium, and you really need to establish a connection between these people. So I do understand it. And I think in some cases it really works. I'm not saying it didn't work here. My problem with the romance ultimately comes up later. Right? So, you know, they meet, they move next door to each other at the beginning of the film. We have a very young Kyla Pratt playing young Monica. I was a huge fan of the Proud Family cartoon on Disney Channel as a kid. And yeah, so anyway, I was like, oh my God, she's so little. Anyway. So, you know, we have them, it kind of seems like she tricks them into thinking she's a boy to let them agree to let her play the basketball. And then she ends up beating him. She gets a scar on her face, which is brought up later because she gets knocked down. Love the typical, I think they're supposed to be like a 10 or 11. And I love the early romance. They share a kiss. And like 2 seconds later, they break up. They're like, I don't, so funny. And then, right, so we fast forward to high school. They're not together. Monica's very focused on basketball. That's the thing she cares about. Quincy, yeah, he's the basketball star, but he's like your typical high school jock character where he has the sport, everybody loves him, he's super popular, and he's got girls clamoring after him to the point that, you know, Monica is fielding, like, date hookup requests for Quincy. They're like the Gabrielle Union's character, shout out to another actress. Gabrielle Union's character is like giving Monica a note to give to Quincy about like getting together to go to the dance. And so I think their romance makes a certain amount of sense in high school. When you're that young and you're feeling very, like, it's very, like, romance in general, love in general, it could be scary. And so when you're young and you don't have a lot of experience navigating these, like, new emotions and, you know, you have a, especially for, I think they're in that second part, they're supposed to be, like, seniors in high school. They've got a lot of, like, stuff on their shoulders, you know, like they're applying to colleges, they're looking forward to the future, there's just like so much to think about. And they're very similar, Quincy and Monica. They have a lot of interests, they, you know, they've grown up together. So I think them getting together in high school makes sense. However, we move into the third quarter, which is them in college, and this is where things are breaking down, because he, again, star basketball player. Also, side note, did you notice that the cutscenes between him and her playing basketball games, that she is like, the women's team is literally like playing in a small gym that they also practice in, but then the men's basketball team is playing in like a large, like, definitely tickets are being sold for probably too much money, and like it looks like professional. Can we just take a moment to, like, anyway. So, you know, they're both focused on their careers. But this is where we see, like, Monica having to put in work, right? Because she comes from being captain of her basketball team to, like, being the freshman who is, like, she's got to work harder. She is not, you know, she went from being the star to now she's on a team with people that were all also stars on their basketball team. And this is where I feel like the movie definitely focuses more on the sport when it comes to Monica than Quincy. Like, Quincy is, it's only ever like, oh, he's great. Like, there's no, there's no story there. Like, he's already at the peak, right? And so, and he's literally fielding offers from the NBA. Like, he's going to drop out of school. And so Monica is like her personal struggles, right? Because in a couple, everybody, you know, the people in that couple have their own personal struggles, and then they have the struggles together as a unit. And so her personal struggles are finding her place in the, you know, college basketball team, working harder, you know, doing everything so that she can, you know, maintain and maintain her spot and excel. His personal struggles have nothing to do with basketball. They're about his parents. And this is where, and I, you know, heterosexual people, but people in general, okay, don't communicate. And so what we have mm-hmm. with them in high school, or with them in college breaking up, is a breakdown in communication. Because she is being there for him, but is also communicating that, like, I need to, you know, adhere to curfew. I need to be at my basketball team. I'm trying to make friends within my, you know, within the women that are on this team with me. And he is so focused on himself and his, you know, family drama that he starts dating another woman or whatever. He's, like, acting out. And she's like, boy, bye. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not. And so this is why, for me, the way it ends up, and it seems that they really haven't talked to each other in the 5 years, because we go from them being freshmen in college to, you know, that they seem to be like a year out of college or so. So I'll say it's like 4 to 5 years. They haven't seemed to talk to each other. So it seems really weird to me that she would just be like, but I love Quincy and I want to marry him. Because I'm like, he literally, instead of talking to you about his feelings and like making room for the fact that, yes, he does have feelings, but everything cannot be about his feelings, he just decided to end your relationship by putting you in a position where you would have to end the relationship. And I feel like, yes, he is older. There is a lot of maturing that happens between 18 and 23. But we have not seen on screen any interactions between these two characters that would lead me to believe that he has matured, that he has grown, that that's not something he would do again in the future. Like, you can't just be like, I feel like the story is relying on you being like, well, so much time has passed, it's fine. But no, it's not. And I have questions. And so that's really why I cannot get behind these two characters' romance in the end, right? Like, I can think they're cute in the middle, but by the end, I'm like, it seems like, oh, but it feels like it falls into the, like, the one that got away trope.
Mm-hmm. I was about to say.
Which I think is just dumb. And our memories are bad. The more you remember something, the more it has changed. Like, our memories are very faulty. And also, like, nostalgia is kind of dangerous. Like, we can romanticize a situation that happened in the past and make it seem not as bad as it was, or we have a very rosy idea of all the good things, but we forget the bad things. And so I think that in this case, I don't know. It just feels, I don't like it, and it feels bad for them to end up together. And it also just feels, in terms of the story, it doesn't feel like anything is accomplished or won, really. It just feels like, well, I don't know who I am without basketball and Quincy, so.
Well, yeah, I think that it relies so heavily on the audience connecting with the idea of, like, the first love and how deeply that first love marks you and moves you. But like you said, she's like the friend at, you know, your wine and bitch night, who's asking if she should text her ex. who was so shitty. And, you know, or fuck, let's change it from a wine and bitch night to you're out at a club. And she's like, should I text my ex while standing in the club bathroom? And there's like a chorus of drunk women behind her going, no, girl, don't do it. And I guess I just really wanted that chorus of drunk girls to be like, no, bitch, don't do it. Because it's exactly like you said. He changes his plans around at the end because he decides that they need to include her. But it's exactly like you said as well, where he's able to make that decision at such low stakes. Like, usually when we see, you know, women in that position in movies, it is a huge fall off of, you know, this massive, typically self-built pedestal that we're presented with. He tumbles off like a step stool to be able to reach that. And so it would feel gratifying for them to end up together in the way that it's presented as something that she very much wants. And we like her as a character. Like, she's a very likable character, I would say. And so, as an audience, you want to root for what she wants. But as the drunk girl in the third stall holding her friend's hair back, I don't get it. I don't know. I feel like they also want you to feel like all of it is so hard won. Like, she's getting all of this through so much work and so much hardship. And, like, the one real hardship that he faces is blowing out his knee and realizing that this career that, if you want, like, obviously I know that being a professional athlete is, like, a shit ton of work. Like, I logically know that that is, like, a very taxing physically, mentally, emotionally, like, you have to be 1,000,000% in every day to be able to do that. And to lose that career because your body gives out, obviously that is devastating. But we see her work so hard and we see him just be a golden boy. And so I also feel like the loss that he suffers loses just a touch of the drama. He's just not as impressive of a love interest as a character like her deserves. She needs to be chosen. Like, it feels like she needs to, and obviously she is. He breaks off his engagement to be with her. So yes, she is chosen. I just can't buy into the childhood best friends to lovers arc and the first love arc as it's laid out. And I think it's because his actions are egregious and the movie tries to excuse them rather than explain them through all the shit that he's going through.
Yeah, I agree. And now I would like to tell you how I would fix this movie so that it could be a beautiful love story. Are you ready?
Perfect. First, make it gay.
Yes, absolutely. And here's the thing. This film is set up for a gay love story, and you cannot convince me otherwise. So, first of all, Monica, bisexual.
Yes.
She has her romance with Quincy. She's dating Quincy into college. But oop, who comes here? Oh, it's her kind of, like, collegiate basketball rival, Sidra. Sidra, who plays the same position, is, like, a year or two older than her, who, you know, they have some words that they're throwing at each other in the locker room. At first, she's trying to be a mentor to Monica, but then, you know, things take a turn, right? So there's some fun, like, you know, like, professional, like, conflict brewing, right? Right around this time, Monica is dealing with some changes to her romance with Quincy, right? Then Sidra hurts herself. Monica subs in for Sidra. Now, Monica's going to be the starting, I don't know what position they play, because I don't know sports. But, right, so she's going to start out. And, you know, Sidra, obviously, very down about this. So I think we take what's there. We take what's there. And we have romance between Sidra and Monica. It is a, like, kind of queer coming of age in a way, because perhaps Monica didn't know this about herself. Also, I think it adds a layer of complexity because women in sports are often, especially here in the late 80s, early 90s, a real fear when it comes to playing sports is that it's somehow not girly, and by then the like snowball effect of that dumb argument is that you are a lesbian because you're so far removed from what the like ideal woman, aka like Monica's mother, what she would think. Mm-hmm. Right? So you have like that really good layer of complexity where like she would then be battling both with like wanting to be seen but also not wanting to be seen, because this is the late 80s, early 90s, and like being queer is, I mean, being queer still is not not always a fun time. So, right? So you have that. And so their relationship's not going to work out in college, Madison, right? Because, you know, I think they're going to smooch. I think they're going to be into each other. But I think it's going to be, with everything else going on and also with that rivalry that they have and Sidra injuring herself and not being able to play, I think it's ultimately going, their relationship isn't going to work out. But, and importantly, this is where I'm like, this film had to be gay and they changed it because... Because then we fast forward to that last quarter, and who does she run into in Spain? Sidra, who is playing for, I believe, the Italian team. What a great time to rekindle the romance, okay? Because now they're older, they're in Europe, they can, you know, they're adults, they're living their own lives. The professional thing that was in the way has kind of fizzled out. Perhaps they've both had relationships since, or they both threw themselves into their careers. Either way, they see each other. It's like, ah, oh, someone, it's a familiarity. It's a much more satisfying version of what I think the film wants you to feel with Quincy, with that nostalgia for something that's like familiar and known. But instead, what we would have is that familiar, known nostalgia, but it's for Sidra, someone who, in my version of this story, she would have had a kind of relationship that was, you know, kind of nipped in the bud through a couple of different circumstances, both like socially, but also like within the storyline and all of the things that Monica is experiencing as a young woman, you know, in college basketball. But then, like, they have all the same things in common that her and Quincy do. So it would just, like, she should have been with Sidra. That is this. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. That's what it should have been. And that's how I think we change it so that the romance is more satisfying. And she's just with Sidra in the end.
Yeah, and I think we would see a lot more personal growth with Monica. That I just had to say that I was gonna make a joke, okay, but Chelsea, bisexuals didn't exist then, like, just as a funny haha. And I googled since when bisexuals ? And Google let me know that bisexuality as a term was coined in the 19th century, but then and then you go into the history of bisexuality on Wikipedia, and it specifically cites basically from the 1970s onward, it became a distinct sexual orientation that gained visibility in Western literature, academia, activism, etc. But I just have to say that you scroll down like a few centimeters to people also ask, and the first thing is, what are symptoms of bisexuality? Like, I can confirm it's a chronic condition. You know, I think it's terminal. I'll go see my doctor about that. But anyway, Christ. Yeah, I completely agree with your fixes. And I think too, you could even have her like still reach out when he blows out hit when Quincy blows out his knee and have this like beautiful rekindling of friendship that I would love to see in more romantic comedies or just really any movie in general, to see this like beautiful rekindling of not necessarily a romantic spark in this regard, obviously, but rekindling of friendship and, you know, being like, hey, I was once a facet of your support system, and if you will allow me to be now, I would like to resume being in that core group of people that you can depend on. And I think that would be beautiful. We could keep a degree of that through line and just have it evolve. But yeah, so, you know, if you we could also work in the symptoms of bisexuality. I can also read the article that pulls up underneath that if you'd like. It's really fucking funny.
I just feel like it was there. Like, I saw it, and I know that yeah. I see gay always. However, I would argue that in this instance, I'm genuinely wondering whether it was a situation similar to Bend It Like Beckham, where...
Yeah.
They were literally like, it's too gay. You need to make it less gay because it was supposed to be gay, but apparently the world wasn't ready for Keira Knightley to make out with Praminder somebody. Why can't I remember her name? Anyway, they could have made out.
I'm really upset that we didn't see them make out. Not in a creep, no, I guess kind of in a creepy way, but also in a way of like, damn, that would have just been great socially.
Praminder Nagra. That's her name. Praminder Nagra mm-hmm. and Keira Knightley could have made out, and I just want the world to know we were robbed. But,
you
okay,
know what, Chelsea, I'm sorry. I think I actually have to end this right here because I have to go stew in my feelings about that. So it was nice having this chat with you. I gotta go. I gotta go cry.
But, like, I feel like they could have had a similar romance to that of Max and I can't remember her name in that show that I now can't remember the name of, A League of Their Own, the new...
Oh, yes.
A League of Their Own.
R.I.P.
Max and... What was her name?
I can't remember. I said R.I.P. because it was canceled well, yeah. before its time because Amazon hates gays, specifically lesbians.
Her name's Esther. Esther and Max. Oh my god. My brain is not remembering anything.
Anyway. Like we're sharing my brain. I'm so sorry for that.
Are we ginger cats and we're just passing the brain cell back and forth?
I told someone the other day that I had ginger cat energy and they were like, yeah, that makes sense because I could totally see you just randomly biting people out of, you know, no reason, no provocation. And I'm like, yeah, that's fair.
All right, Madison. So I feel like we've talked about what we loved about this movie. We talked about what could be improved. We talked about why we didn't like the romance. We've even offered some suggestions of how this movie could have been made better. And now I think we have to ask some very important follow-up questions that we ask about every single film that we watch to determine whether it is or is not a rom-com.
Well, Chelsea, I'm so glad that you brought these up because I have been dying to ask you these questions. I have missed asking you these questions. So, Chelsea, is there a primary romantic pairing that dates? Do they date?
I can say with the utmost confidence that they do in fact date.
Oh yeah.
So yes.
They date so many times that you get sick of it. You're like, why are you still dating? So yeah, this one gets a big fat check mark. But Chelsea, we're gonna fall flat on this. Did we laugh?
Yeah, this is where this is not a comedy.
No.
This is a rom, but not a com.
Yeah, this is a drom.
It's a rom-drom.
It's a rom-drom. God, that's terrible.
Which is ironically the sound that a basketball makes, right?
Can we get Tori to just make a random sound effect here for us? That'd be great. I would say that this didn't have pointed attempts at humor. It didn't try because that's not what it was trying to do. And then Chelsea, finally, and again, is love in the driver's seat? Meaning, if we remove the romance from this plot, do we still have a strong, like, backbone of a movie?
So here's the thing. It's very clear that this film is centered around the romance. Like, that is what connects seemingly two stories about young people's relationship to the sport that is basketball. However, there's still a lot there if you take out the romance. So is romance driving this plot? I don't think so. But then I argue, okay, let's look at the title of the film, Love and Basketball. And the question is, when we talk about love, are we talking about romance? Are we talking about the passion for the game of basketball? Because then I would argue that love is in the driver's seat. It's just not romantic love. It's the love of the game.
Yeah, and I would say, like you said, love is what's tying these two characters together. I also think that it acts as the structural element of how we move through the story, obviously, because it's centered around, you know, them coming together, them falling apart, coming together, falling apart, etc. That being said, I think the romantic love, I just didn't find compelling enough. It's obviously there. It's obviously a huge part of the structure. It's the one thing connecting these two beyond their shared love of athletics. Yes, but reluctantly.
Yeah.
I want to give it like a 0.9. You know, like a 9 out of 10. Yes. But I don't know how to do math, so fractions get really dicey. Decimals are harder. I almost said 0.9 out of 10, and that would have been just fucking wrong. Is this a rom-com? No. Is it a rom? Yeah, all right. Chelsea, I'm sorry that we're kicking off this latest set of recording with not a rom-com, but I feel like you enjoyed it more than if it had been a rom-com, even though it was sports.
Here's the thing. When it comes to dramas, I feel like rom-coms play things off as, mm-hmm. like, insignificant, and we as viewers are just supposed to accept it. But I find that difficult myself when watching those movies, which is why I think a lot of times I feel very frustrated. And while I did have frustrations with this film, I do think that the film offers the appropriate amount of weight to the situations that the characters are in. While I don't think that it is flawless by any means, I can at least respect that the romance and all the situations surrounding it felt like they mattered to the characters. Mm-hmm. It's a little wish-washy in terms of the romance at the ending there, but I don't know. I think sometimes rom-coms feel very much like we've just plopped these characters into a plot and we have to make it work out. I think that this film, it's not a rom-com, and it wasn't trying to make us believe something that we have to for the sake of the format. Yes, in that respect, I think I enjoyed this movie more than a number of the films we've watched.
Yeah, I think too, it's difficult to pull off a rom-com spanning time like this. Obviously what comes to mind is When Harry Met Sally, because that spans, I believe, about a decade. Yeah, it spans a decade. But it's quite difficult to pull that off in the romantic comedy realm, because just as more time passes, you have the gravity of life weighing on you. And you want to avoid that gravity as much as possible in a rom-com genre. Which I think, like you've said previously, it doesn't lend itself to the development of a relationship, and we have to take a lot of things for granted as an audience, and suspend a lot of disbelief. So I would say that, yeah, I'm glad that we watched this. Do I think it should be included on rom-com lists? No, but I understand why it is, because I think we generally have a really hard time designating romantic dramas and romantic comedies apart from one another, because we write off romance as a genre entirely and just decide that everything that falls underneath that umbrella can just stick all together, because that is, you know, you don't have to put as much thought or effort into the categorization and understanding the audiences that would like those, because it's the idea of like, oh, if they get together at the end, then this group will like it regardless. So I do understand how it worms its way on those lists, and I don't begrudge the list that puts this as a rom-com. It's just categorically false. But I think ultimately, I mean, it's not that huge of a stretch to say that people who enjoy romantic comedies would like this movie. And hey, has the same ability like Ted Lasso to make you care about sports for 2 hours if you don't give a flying fuck about them, so.
That is very, very true. I don't know anything about basketball. I didn't care about basketball before I watched this film. I don't care about it afterward. But during that 2 hours I was watching it, I was invested in basketball.
Yeah.
At least insofar as it relates to Monica.
I agree. And I think the reason why I don't like basketball really only comes down to the fact that the shoe squeaking noise, it doesn't vibe with me in a sensory way. I mean, I could get into sports. I can follow football. I can have fun watching the other football live if there are really rowdy fans that make me care about it with just the swell of the crowd. And we all know the sport that really holds my heart. So yeah, I could get into it, you know?
Badminton.
Oh yeah, I am a slut for badminton. You know, you get that. It's in the game, you know, a shuttlecock. What could be more exciting? Oh, Jesus Christ.
I need everyone to know that we do the connections every day, the New York Times, like you do the Wordle, the Mini, and the connections. And recently shuttlecock was an answer that like you have to connect for. And I was like, what the fuck is a shuttlecock?
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah, it's so funny because I think the only reason why I understand badminton at all, like as a concept, is growing up, my grandparents got like one of those like 3-in-1 backyard like sports things, because they had 7 grandchildren and they're like, they come over here often. We should have a way to like just plant them outside and have them enjoy themselves. And part of that like 3-in-1 sport kit thing was badminton. And so
shuffleboard, yeah. And croquet, was those the other two?
No, it all had to do with the net. Like the net could be lowered, it could act as like a soccer net of sorts. Like it was too, it wasn't wide enough to really be that, but I'll consult with my cousins and be like, hey, give me all of the details of, you know, our childhood. Because really, I only cared about the badminton. So we would also make, you know, those big ass flying grasshoppers.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of them. And so we would make it a game to when they, this is horrible. Oh, my God. When they would like fly up out of the grass and startle us, we would smack the shit out of them with our badminton rackets. So,
oh my God.
Yeah. Oh, that and my grandfather would use the rackets to go after carpenter bees because, you know, they drill holes in wood. And they were trying to drill several holes into his backyard swing frame. And so he would just kind of bop them out of the way.
Just bop them.
Bop it.
Yeah.
Twist it. Pull it.
You know what? When we're off air, I'll tell you my first thought on Bop It, and it's what my friend Cassidy equated Bop It to when we were in high school. So,
well, Madison, we've answered the Trinity required questions, and now I must know, what's your watchability score for this film? And since it's been so long, I will remind you that our watchability score is based on the real estate walkability score function. So at number one, you're stranded in the desert. Number two, Backroads Barbecue. Number three, we're at a strip mall in suburbia. Four, we're four blocks from a transit stop. And five, the best coffee in town is right downstairs.
You know, I would have to give this one probably a 3.5 in that you're in a suburban strip mall, but it contains a movie theater where they have like $2 Tuesdays.
Yeah.
And so I would say that this is a $2 Tuesday matinee 3.5.
Honestly, I would give this the same. I was trying to stick to our, you know, our scoring. But I think that's what's hard about the out of five scoring is that it never feels, because like, do you round up? Do you round down? And either way feels either mean or too generous. But yeah, I think a 3.5. I think I would have liked this movie a lot better if it was just about Monica, or even better if it had been a story in which Monica and Cedra ended up together, because I see it. I saw it there. I think it was supposed to be that way. And I think, what year was this? 2000?
Yeah.
Yeah. They just, 2000s America was not ready, and which is a shame. It's a real shame.
Wasn't ready for the bisexual, which if you tune in the next episode, maybe I'll read off the 9 symptoms of bisexuality according to Google. But Chelsea, do you want to know what we will be watching even if we don't discuss the symptoms of bisexuality next time?
Yeah, what will we be watching?
We will dive into the world of John Cusack and Kate Beckinsale in Serendipity to give you a little sneak peek at the idea of it, which I don't usually give you, but I just really like it. This movie will also kind of transport some people through time, not in a time travel way, unfortunately. So your dad may not like this movie, but we do see a distance in time from initial meeting to when we see our characters come together. And I'm really interested to kind of get your read on this movie, because I like it. I have some issues with John Cusack's character, but you know what? That's not for here. That's for later.
You know, I don't remember what episode it was in, but I remember you saying you love a Cusack, be it John or Joan. And now I really wish I knew so that we could go and cut it and put it in here.
I know. So yeah, if you're one of our listeners and you know exactly what episode I talked about loving either John or Joan Cusack, just hit me up. Oh, and Chelsea, I do want it noted that yeah, I think by this point it should be 2 episodes in, I do believe. But if it's not, at least by this point it will be. I just want to note that we have new intro music courtesy of the artist Good Steph, based out of LA.
Really exciting.
I know. I'm glad that we finally got someone who's a profesh to do our intro music. So yeah, go listen to her songs, Call Your Mom, great bop. If you want something dancier that feels, I'm just gonna say it. If you are in a mood to feel cunty, listen to If I Had a Heart. And I told Steph that it's very cunty, and she's like, that is a huge compliment. So, also E for explicit on this episode for language, just for that.
Yeah, because it's not as if we've been, you know, just saying, like, shiver me timbers or...
what, I don't know. Golly gosh!
Golly gosh, yeah. Golly gosh.
You can't forget about that. Yeah, fuck.
Well, Madison, this has been a great entry point back into recording. I know it's the third episode of the season, but we recorded those other two 271 days ago.
Yeah, when we had a hope that the AMPTP wouldn't be shits and drag the strikes out forever.
But thank you all for tuning in to this episode and to all the other ones that I assume everyone has listened to all episodes. We if you want to get in touch with us, you can follow us on Instagram at Love at First Screening. Send us a DM. We do fun polls and such over there from time to time. Come say hi. Of course, if you'd like to contact us in a more official capacity, you can email us at loveatfirstscreening@gmail.com. Let us know what rom-com or rom-com adjacent film we should watch next. So until next time, golly gosh.
Golly gosh.
Golly gosh with the shuttlecocks.
Oh no, not the shuttlecocks.